Buddy, and welcome to the second night of the Eight Nights of Christmas with Reading with Rick, as we are going to bring you a couple of early children's stories here to get things started tonight, and then we'll have another story after that. But I thought it would be nice maybe for some of the youngsters that are listening tonight to have a chance to maybe a couple of stories that they can relate to. So let's get started here. The first one, well, he's a familiar little character. We're going to start with Merry Christmas, Curious George. Merry Christmas, Curious George. So let's get started with our first story tonight on Eight Nights of Christmas with Reading with Rick. This is George. He lived with his friend, the man with the yellow hat. He was a good little monkey and always very curious. Today, George was visiting a Christmas tree farm. "You can help me pick out the perfect tree for our home," his friend told him. "Keep close to me while we look." George promised to be good, but little monkeys sometimes forget. The Christmas tree farm had more trees than George had ever seen. He found a very nice one right away. But then, another caught his eye. George could not resist climbing up the tallest tree to get a better view. He looked for the man with the yellow hat, but his friend was nowhere in sight. Two men tromped into the clearing. "There's our tree," one man told the other, and the men cut down the tree and loaded it onto a truck, along with George. George held on tightly. He saw the man with the yellow hat as the truck drove away, but the truck was going too fast. George couldn't jump off. He was scared, but still a little curious. Soon the truck stopped in front of a hospital. George peeked out of the branches as the men carried his tree inside. The hospital was a busy place. George jumped out of the tree. There was lots here to see and do. He looked at some interesting pictures. He found a jacket and tried it on. He played on a trampoline. He even went for a ride on a speedy little cart. What fun! Then George spotted something very interesting. It was his tree. George knew that Christmas trees were supposed to have tinsel and twinkling lights and shiny ornaments, but his tree was empty. George thought and thought, and then he had an idea. Next, George noticed a pile of gifts in the corner of the room. The gifts looked pretty, but George was curious. Could he make them look even prettier? This red bow would look much better on the green box, and the name tags might look nicer on different packages, too. A nurse arrived, and what did she see? A monkey, and he's making a big mess. A group of children crowded around the nurse. They were all patients at the hospital. Even though it was almost Christmas, the children were not smiling or looking happy. "Come along," the nurse said, picking George up. "I'd better get you out of here before you can ruin anything else." A girl with a cast stared at George's tree, and suddenly she giggled. "Look," she said, "it's my X-ray." A boy laughed, "and there's the balloon from my room." All the children started chattering and laughing as they looked at George's funny decorations. "Can't he stay for the party?" a boy asked the nurse. "We don't mind about the gifts. It'll be fun to sort them out. Please let him stay, please, the other children chimed in. When she saw how happy the children looked, the nurse looked happier too. I suppose he can stay, she said, if he promises to help fix the tree. Well, George was happy to help. The children helped too. Some of them returned George's decorations, while others handed George the real ornaments. He scampered up and down, stringing lights and hanging tinsel. Being a monkey, he was good at that sort of thing. He was also good at making the children laugh. When the tree was finished, George helped open the gifts. He was having such a good time that he completely forgot he was lost. Until the man with the yellow hat hurried into the room. "There you are, George," he cried. "I followed that truck all the way here." George was very happy to be reunited with his friend. The nurse invited them both to stay for milk and cookies.
"Ho, ho, ho! Did someone mention milk and cookies?"
And a man in a red suit walked into the room, his belly jiggling. He was holding a beautiful golden star. George's eyes widened. It was Santa Claus.
"Who would like to put the star on top of the tree?" Santa asked.
"George!" the children cried at once. "Let George do it!" And George scurried up the tree one last time, and he put the golden star in place carefully. "Merry Christmas, Curious George!" And that is the story of Merry Christmas, Curious George. Now let's have another quick little story here. And this one is about a little teddy bear named Corduroy. And this one is called Corduroy's Christmas Surprise. There was only a week to go until Christmas, and Corduroy could hardly wait. This was one of the best times of the year. Corduroy loved the smell of his Christmas tree. He loved taking the ornaments and lights out of the closet. And he loved stringing popcorn and berries and trimming the tree. And that was only the beginning. Corduroy's list of fun things to do at Christmas time went on and on and on. This year, Corduroy thought to himself, Christmas was going to be even more fun than usual. His best friends, Mouse, Rabbit, Dolly, and Puppy, were coming over to spend Christmas Day at Corduroy's house. And he had little gifts for his guests. So he pulled out the wrapping paper, the tape, and the ribbons. Wrapping presents always got Corduroy into the holiday spirit. That reminded Corduroy that he hadn't written his letter to Santa. What did he want for Christmas? Well, thought Corduroy, it would be fun to have ice skates this winter. He could use a new warm sweater. Oh, he'd always wanted a train set, and a new ball would be nice, too. Corduroy wrote his letter in his neatest, best printing. Just then, the doorbell rang. Ding dong! Corduroy put down his letter and went to the door. And there were Mouse, Rabbit, and Puppy standing in front of his house. And they were singing. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. When the carolers had finished, Puppy said, Corduroy, grab your coat and come with us. We'll go caroling at Dolly's house next. So Corduroy did just that. He put on his coat and scarf, and the four friends made their way over to Dolly's house. And as they began to sing, Dolly opened the door, and she looked so surprised. Then Dolly invited them all inside. I'm putting the finishing touches on my gingerbread house, she said. Why don't you four come in and help me? A real homemade gingerbread house? Corduroy had to see this. And what a gingerbread house it was. It had lots of windows, a fancy front door, and a chimney. Corduroy could hardly believe his eyes. This is one of the best things about Christmas, said Dolly. Don't forget Christmas trees, said Corduroy. And Christmas carols, said Rabbit. And Christmas candy, said Puppy, as he gobbled some candy. And Christmas presents, said Mouse. And everybody laughed. Then they started talking about what each of them wanted for Christmas. Dolly said she wished for a pair of ice skates. Puppy said he'd always wanted a train set. Rabbit said he could use a new sweater, and Mouse said a brand new ball would be fun. Corduroy didn't say anything. How could he tell them that he had written to Santa to ask for all of those things? Back at home, Corduroy found his letter to Santa right where he had left it, and he decided to make a few changes. What if there weren't enough presents to go around? What if Corduroy got what he wanted, but his friends didn't? So Corduroy pulled out a new piece of paper and wrote another letter to Santa, and this is what it said. Dear Santa, please bring ice skates for Dolly, a sweater for Rabbit, trains for Puppy, and a ball for Mouse. I don't really need anything this year. Thank you, Corduroy. Corduroy put the letter in an envelope, and in his neatest, best printing, he addressed it to Santa Claus at the North Pole. He stuck on a stamp and sealed the letter shut. Then Corduroy pulled on his coat, his scarf, and his boots, and he walked outside to the mailbox and dropped the letter inside. He hoped Santa would get his letter before Christmas. A few days later, it was Christmas Eve. The very next morning, Corduroy's friends would be coming over to celebrate with him. Corduroy was getting ready by baking Christmas cookies. He'd hoped he'd made enough. Before Corduroy knew it, it was time for bed. But first, he had two important things to do. He hung his stocking on the mantle, and he left milk and cookies on the table for you-know-who. Maybe Santa wouldn't be bringing anything for him, Corduroy thought, but he was so happy that his friends would get exactly what they wanted. And then Corduroy climbed into bed. All night long, he dreamed of the happy looks on his friends' faces when they opened their presents on Christmas morning. The next morning, Corduroy sat up in bed and rubbed his eyes. It was Christmas Day. It had finally come. Corduroy looked out the window to see a crisp, sunny day and a fresh blanket of snow on the ground. Then Corduroy rushed out to the living room to find lots of presents under the tree. Corduroy could see there was one labeled for Mouse and one for Rabbit, and there was one for Dolly and one for Puppy, and, well, could it be? There was one for Corduroy, too, and extra presents for each of them. Corduroy was so surprised. Now he really couldn't wait for his friends to arrive. And once everyone had come, Mouse, Rabbit, Dolly, Puppy, and Corduroy sat down together by the tree and opened their presents. Dolly got ice skates and a scarf. Rabbit got the sweater he wanted and a picture book, too. Puppy got the train set of his dreams and a new hat. Mouse got a ball and some warm winter boots. And Corduroy got ice skates and a sweater. How in the world did Santa know that he wanted them? But really, Corduroy thought to himself, the best Christmas gift of all was that he was surrounded by his friends on Christmas Day, and they were all so happy. And that made Corduroy happy, too. He would have to write one more letter to Santa to say, thank you for the best Christmas ever. And that was Corduroy's Christmas surprise. A couple of nice short little stories for the younger kids that are listening to the Eight Nights of Christmas with Reading with Rick. Okay, now time for another story. And this story is going to take us back a ways. And well, I'll give you a little background on this story. William Sidney Porter was born on September the 11th in 1862 in Greensboro, North Carolina. Now, William Porter attended school for just a short time, and then he went to work as a clerk in his uncle's drugstore. When he got to be 20 years old, Porter went to Texas. He first worked on a ranch and then later worked as a bank teller, and in 1887, he got married and began to write some sketches. A few years later, he founded a humorous weekly titled The Rolling Stone, but the publication failed, and he went on to become a reporter and a columnist for the Houston Post. But he got in trouble. In 1896, Porter was indicted for embezzling bank funds, which actually turned out to be the result of a technical mismanagement error. But Porter fled to a reporting job in New Orleans and then to Honduras. When news of his wife's serious illness reached him, Porter returned to Texas. But his wife passed away. Porter was imprisoned in Columbus, Ohio, where he served 3 years. And while he was there, he began writing adventure stories set in Texas and Central America that quickly became popular, and they were collected and published in a book titled Cabbages and Kings in 1904. Porter was released from prison in 1902 and went to live in New York City, his home and the setting of most of his fiction for the remainder of his life. Well, he decided that it wasn't maybe a good thing to write under his actual name of William Sidney Porter, so he adopted what is known as a pen name. And that pen name that he wrote under and became quite famous for, O. Henry. And one of the most famous stories that O. Henry ever wrote and published is tonight's feature story on the Eight Nights of Christmas with Reading with Rick. This is O. Henry's The Gift of the Magi. $1.87, that was all, and 60 cents of it was in pennies. Pennies saved one and two at a time by bulldozing the grocer and the vegetable man and the butcher until one's cheeks burned with the silent imputation of parsimony that such close dealing implied. Three times Della counted it, $1.87, and the next day would be Christmas. There was clearly nothing to do but flop down on the shabby little couch and howl. So Della did it, which instigates the moral reflection that life is made up of sobs, and sniffles, and smiles, with sniffles predominating. While the mistress of the home is gradually subsiding from the first stage to the second, take a look at the home, a furnished flat at $8 per week. It did not exactly beggar description, but it certainly had that word on the lookout for the mendicancy squad. In the vestibule below was a letterbox into which no letter would go, and an electric button from which no mortal finger could coax a ring. Also appertaining thereunto was a card bearing the name Mr. James Dillingham Young. The Dillingham had been flung to the breeze during a former period of prosperity when its possessor was being paid $30 per week. Now, when the income was shrunk to $20, though, they were thinking seriously of contracting to a modest and unassuming D. But whenever Mr. James Dillingham Young came home and reached his flat above, he was called Jim and greatly hugged by Mrs. James Dillingham Young, already introduced to you as Della, which is all very good. Della finished her cry and attended to her cheeks with the powder rag. She stood by the window and looked out dully at a gray cat walked on a gray fence in a gray backyard. Tomorrow would be Christmas Day, and she had only $1.87 with which to buy Jim a present. She had been saving every penny she could for months with this result. $20 a week doesn't go far. Expenses had been greater than she had calculated. They always are. Only $1.87 to buy a present for Jim, her Jim. Many a happy hour she had spent planning for something nice for him, something fine and rare and sterling, something just a little bit near to being worthy of the honor of being owned by Jim. There was a pier glass between the windows of the room. Perhaps you've seen a pier glass in an $8 flat. A very thin and a very agile person may, by observing his reflection in a rapid sequence of longitudinal strips, obtain a fairly accurate conception of this look. Della, being slender, had mastered the art. Suddenly she whirled from the window and stood before the glass. Her eyes were shining brilliantly, but her face had lost its color within 20 seconds. Rapidly, she pulled down her hair and let it fall to its full length. Now, there were two possessions of the James Dillingham Youngs in which they both took a mighty pride. One was Jim's gold watch that had been his father's and his grandfather's. The other was Della's hair. Had the Queen of Sheba lived in the flat across the air shaft, Della would have let her hair hang out the window someday to dry just to depreciate Her Majesty's jewels and gifts. Had King Solomon been the janitor with all his treasures piled up in the basement, Jim would have pulled out his watch every time he passed just to see him pluck at his beard from envy. So now Della's beautiful hair fell about her rippling and shining like a cascade of brown waters. It reached below her knee and made itself almost a garment for her. And then she did it up again nervously and quickly. Once she faltered for a minute and stood still while a tear or two splashed on the worn red carpet. On went her old brown jacket, on went her old brown hat, and with a whirl of skirts and with the brilliant sparkle still in her eyes, she fluttered out the door and down the stairs to the street. Where she stopped, the sign read, "Miss Sofroni, hair goods of all kinds." One flight up, Della ran and collected herself, panting. Madam, large, too white, chilly, hardly looked the Sofroni. "Will you buy my hair?" asked Della. "I buy hair," said Madam. "Take your hat off and let's have a sight at the looks of it." Down rippled her brown cascade. $20, said Madame, lifting the mass with a practiced hand. "Give it to me quick," said Della. Oh, and the next 2 hours tripped by on rosy wings. Forget the hashed metaphor. She was ransacking the stores for Jim's present. And she found it at last. It surely had been made for Jim and no one else. There was no other like it in any of the stores, and she had turned all of them inside out. It was a platinum fob chain, simple and chaste in design, properly proclaiming its value by substance alone and not by ornamentation, as all good things should do. It was even worthy of the watch. As soon as she saw it, she knew that it must be Jim's. It was like him. Quietness and value, the description applied to both. $21 they took from her for it, and she hurried home with 87 cents. With that chain on his watch, Jim might be properly anxious about the time in any company. Grand as the watch was, he sometimes looked at it on the sly on account of the old leather strap that he used in place of a chain. When Della reached home, her intoxication gave way a little to prudence and reason. She got out her curling irons and lighted the gas and went to work repairing the ravages made by generosity added to love, which is always a tremendous task, dear friends, a mammoth task. Within 40 minutes, her head was covered with tiny, close-lying curls that made her look wonderfully like a truant schoolboy. She looked at her reflection in the mirror long, carefully, and critically. "If Jim doesn't kill me," she said to herself, "before he takes a second look at me, he'll say I look like a Coney Island chorus girl. But what could I do? Oh, what could I do with $1.87? At 7 o'clock, the coffee was made and the frying pan was on the back of the stove, hot and ready to cook the chops. Jim was never late. Della doubled the fob chain in her hand and sat on the corner of the table near the door that he always entered. Then she heard his step on the stair away down on the first flight, and she turned white for just a moment. She had a habit of saying a little silent prayer about the simplest everyday things, and now she whispered, "Please, God, make him think I'm still pretty." The door opened, and Jim stepped in and closed it. He looked thin and very serious. Poor fellow, he was only 22, and to be burdened with a family. He needed a new overcoat, and he was without gloves. Jim stopped inside the door, as immovable as a setter at the scent of a quail. His eyes were fixed upon Della, and there was an expression in them that she could not read, and it terrified her. It was not anger, nor surprise, nor disapproval, nor horror, nor any of the sentiments that she had been prepared for. He simply stared at her fixedly with that peculiar expression on his face. Della wriggled off the table and went for him. "Jim, darling," she cried, "don't look at me that way. I had my hair cut off and sold because I couldn't have lived through Christmas without giving you a present. It'll grow out again. You won't mind, will you? I just had to do it. My hair grows awfully fast. Say Merry Christmas, Jim, and let's be happy. You don't know what a beautiful, nice gift I've got for you." "You've cut off your hair?" asked Jim, laboriously, as if he had not arrived at that patent fact yet, even after the hardest mental labor. "Cut it off and sold it," said Della. "Don't you like me just as well anyhow? I'm me without my hair, ain't I?" Jim looked about the room curiously. "You say your hair is gone," he said with an air of almost idiocy. "You needn't look for it," said Della. "It's sold, I tell you. Sold and gone, too. It's Christmas Eve, boy. Be good to me, for it went for you. Maybe the hairs of my head were numbered." And she went on with a sudden serious sweetness. "But nobody could ever count my love for you. Shall I put the chops on, Jim?" Out of his trance, Jim seemed quickly to wake. He enfolded his Della. For 10 seconds, let us regard with discreet scrutiny some inconsequential object in the other direction. $8 a week or $1 million a year, what's the difference? A mathematician or a wit would give you the wrong answer. The Magi brought valuable gifts, but that was not among them. This dark assertion will be illuminated later on. Jim drew a package from his overcoat pocket and threw it upon the table. "Don't make a mistake, Belle, about me. I don't think there's anything in the way of a haircut or a shave or a shampoo that could make me like my girl any less. But if you'll unwrap that package, you may see why you had me going a while at first." White fingers and nimble tore at the string and paper. And then an ecstatic scream of joy. And then, alas, a quick feminine change to hysterical tears and wails, necessitating the immediate employment of all the comforting powers of the Lord of the Flat. For there lay the combs, the set of combs, side and back, that Della had worshipped long in a Broadway window. Beautiful combs, pure tortoise shell with jeweled rims, just the shade to wear in the beautiful vanished hair. They were expensive combs, she knew, and her heart had simply craved and yearned over them without the least hope of possession. And now they were hers. But the tresses that should have adorned the covered adornments were gone. But she hugged them to her bosom, and at length she was able to look up with dim eyes and a smile and say, "My hair grows so fast, Jim." And then Della leaped up like a little singed cat and cried, "Oh, oh!" Jim had not yet seen his beautiful present. She held it out to him eagerly upon her open palm. The dull, precious metal seemed to flash with a reflection of her bright and ardent spirit. "Isn't it a dandy, Jim? I hunted all over town to find it. You'll have to look at the time 100 times a day now. Give me your watch. I want to see how it looks on it." Instead of obeying, Jim tumbled down on the couch and put his hands under the back of his head, and he smiled. "Dell," said he, "let's put our Christmas presents away and keep them a while. They're too nice to use just at present. I sold the watch to get the money to buy your combs. And now, suppose you put the chops on." The Magi, as you know, were wise men, wonderfully wise men, who brought gifts to the babe in the manger. They invented the art of giving Christmas presents. Being wise, their gifts were no doubt wise ones, possibly bearing the privilege of exchange in case of duplication. And here I have lamely related to you the uneventful chronicle of 2 foolish children in a flat whose most unwisely sacrificed for each other the greatest treasures of their house. But in a last word to the wise of these days, let it be said that of all who give gifts, these 2 were the wisest. Of all who give and receive gifts, such as they are wisest. Everywhere they are wisest. They are the Magi. And that completes our second night of the Eight Nights of Christmas reading with Rick. I hope you have a wonderful Friday evening. And I'll be back with another Christmas story for Saturday, tomorrow, on Eight Nights of Christmas reading with Rick.